Well, thanks to those who are joining us a little early. Appreciate it. Lynn and Dave and I are really looking forward to this evening. And you will be intrigued to hear that we've got people all over the world. We've got people coming on from Taiwan, from Ottawa, from Denver, from Portland, from Whistler, and points between. So we'll just give people a few seconds to make their way into the Zoom room.
John, you got people coming from Taiwan. Is that your kid, your two sons, or is that other people? Because two of your boys are over there right now, right?
That's true. I have two sons in Taiwan right now. So our last episode about promoting peace and democracy in the Taiwan Straits was partly personal and partly geopolitical.
Protecting the family.
That's right.
That's great. And Lynn, where are you today?
Oh, I'm in Richmond, British Columbia. I'm only maybe half an hour from my hometown in White Rock. And it's amazing that we can, you know, all connect as we do from all parts of the planet. Makes it really interesting and fun and amazing. I'm still constantly amazed that we can be anywhere and be connected like this.
Well, you know, Lynn, I was really surprised. One of the folks that I was working with this morning is a gal from Switzerland. And so we were on a call. It was 7 o'clock to suit her time zone. But the client that I was working with wanted to get some advice that she could offer. And so we had an hour with her. Well, it wouldn't have made sense to fly her over here for the hour, but it sure made sense to get on the Zoom. So there are some advantages to these Zoom rooms, eh, John?
Well, that's for sure. And meetings that I have attended in person, regular meetings, there's one that I attend on a Tuesday morning. It's been going for over 30 years. It's way better attended because we can meet by Zoom. And I will persist to say that ultimately, if we fall into the trap of thinking this is the way to go and miss the human interaction of getting together, then we will really miss a lot. So, I love it. And we couldn't be doing what we're doing this evening and gather the people from, I guess we have 18 time zones that are encompassed this evening without it, but I don't want to become addicted to it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's practical, but it's not the end of the world. It's not the be all and end all, I should say.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you realize it when over these last few years, when we've done a lot of Zooming, how now that we have been able to gather at different times, oh, the energy is, you know, it's just incredible to be together in a room. But we'll do the best we can to send energy out to all of you that are, you know, joined and listening.
I think one group that laments Zoom is the people who cut hair. And so when I was in recently.
I don't know any of those people.
Well, and I know this may be an exclusive group for you, Dave, but the person who was cutting my hair recently was lamenting. She said that her business has gone down and it's never recovered because people have got used to being sloppy. So that's another possible consequence of Zoom. So folks, if you're just joining us, thank you for doing so. We're delighted that you're here. We do have people who are coming on from different parts of the world. It's fantastic that we can do this. And I'm really excited about this evening session. We've got two wonderful articulate speakers this evening who I think are going to challenge us and make us think of not just about choosing heroes, but about being mentors and about being mentored. So we'll give it just a couple more minutes because I see people are still streaming in, and then we're going to jump in and fasten your seatbelts.
John, thanks for having us. Looking forward to it as well.
Well, I'm delighted that I can get you two together because I think if you both inspire each other the way you inspire others, it's going to be a worthy evening. Well, one person I really hope will enjoy the evening is somebody who has been a coach and a mentor to you, Lynn, and to me, Jack Taunton, who just inspired me to get this Canadian Health and Fitness Institute going and has inspired so many people around the world, the father of sport medicine in Canada, and the guy who launched the Vancouver Sun Run and the Vancouver Marathon. And I know he's very excited about your being on the show tonight. And you saw him recently, you said.
Yes, coincidentally, we had dinner last night. And let me, as you know, this is a rare occasion, first of all, that you could pin such a man down to a particular day and time. Always willing, but so busy in many, many ways. He's had a few health challenges recently, but wow, we had a very vibrant discussion last night in yet another project that Dr. Jack is involved in. And he and I go back to early days when I was an athlete running around UBC at the Ellen McGavin Sport Medicine Clinic, a pioneer clinic for sport medicine. He's, you know, doctor, coach, mentor. I've got lots of stories if we want to go there, that's for sure.
Later tonight. So people, thank you for joining us this evening from all over the world, clients, friends, people just curious about our celebrity panelists tonight. Glad that you're with us. We have a great production team. I want to thank Dana McLeod, Elliot Harada, and Amber Zhao for joining me at Pan Pacific to bring this show together. We do have several upcoming episodes. I don't want to distract you from our great panelists this evening, but I'd like you to take note of what we have planned for the new year. You've got in January, on the eve of the Emergencies Act Commission doing its report, we have Rupa Subramania, the star reporter for the National Post, and Carl Harrison, who has got going the Institute for Freedom and Justice, talking about vaccinations and civil liberties. So that'll be an interesting session. And then you see all the other sessions that we have planned going through the new year. So put those on your calendar. The genesis of this series, it began when I was thinking about issues that just seemed larger than life. Some of them baffling, some of them large, some of them beyond my ability to cope, and yet I felt like I wanted to make a difference. And I knew that, I didn't have the answers, but I figured that I might be able to gather people who could answer really tough questions and help us cope as individuals. In a sea of uncertainty, how can we be good citizens? How can we improve ourselves, improve our families, make a contribution to our communities and our country even? And so the series was born, Things That Matter. And the first episode this year was a month ago when we looked at promoting peace and democracy in the Taiwan Straits. Certainly an issue bigger than any of us, and yet one that affects all of us. And you can go to the link on the site and see that discussion, how it actually boiled down to things that individuals like you and I can do to make a difference. So I know that this evening we're going to have another great episode as we talk about how we can choose our heroes. And, you know, the title for tonight actually came from a TED Talk that was done by our panelist Dave Bantol this evening. It's about not just choosing heroes, but also choosing mentors and being mentors. So these are topics that influence us in how we battle with some of these really baffling issues. David Brooks, in his book Road to Character, describes big swaths of my life in saying, you're busy, but you have a vague anxiety that your life has not achieved its ultimate meaning and significance. So in the lead up to tonight's show, I was involuntarily on a sort of sick leave, not sick leave, but I foolishly tried to move a filing cabinet without pulling out the drawers. And so after the move of the filing cabinet, my wife Donna says, you know, it would have been easier if you pulled out the drawers. Not only was she right, but I ended up canceling a ski trip and just having the time to pull out some savory books, to do some thinking, and to lead up to tonight's show about what do we do to improve ourselves what would be a great Christmas gift to one another? What would be a great way to move towards 2023 in a time of such great uncertainty? Another thing that's going on in my life is that Dawn and I decided to take on three friends from the Ukraine who are now living with us at our home. And that has been an incredibly enriching experience for us. But just this morning, Katerina walks into the kitchen and says her mom has been without electricity for 3 days. Water is intermittent, and her mom can't get on the phone because the cell phone coverage is out. So, you know, these kinds of things, they're big, anxious kind of problems. And you say to yourself, well, what can I do? Well, you could easily fall into a pit of anxiety and depression. And during the pandemic, up to 40% of adults in Canada reported sensing a heightened level of anxiety. It strikes me that we need to do something to get ourselves out of those traps of anxiety and depression, and to say to ourselves, we can do something. You know, Donna and I feel good. We can't go to Ukraine and fight the war, but at least we can bring three persons into our home and do something to help them. And of course, they're helping their families. So that moves us to this evening's discussion. I recall an editorial in Maclean's magazine years and years ago when the writer said that the best thing you can do in life is to surround yourself with people who can influence your life positively. And to me, that's one version of choosing your heroes. So there's different ways of doing this. And we will find in tonight's discussion that Dave is very methodical about how he chooses his heroes. We're going to hear about things he's written, things he said, and he's quite systematic about it and very thoughtful and very analytical. And I know that we're going to get some inspiration from that. Lynn has a different approach. She certainly is not lacking in discipline, but she has a more free-flowing approach to choosing her heroes. And both of them, I would say, are mentors and heroes for others. So, Dave, we're going to go to you first. I think of you in many ways. You were a CEO at Dominion Construction. You helped bring the 2010 Games to Vancouver, which ultimately made a big impact on my life because I got to serve as Member of Parliament for the area that hosted most of those games. You're a professor. You're a family enterprise advisor. So you've seen parents who may be good heroes or anti-heroes for their children. You're an executive coach and you're an author. And by the end of the show, I'm going to introduce the three books that you've written, The Company You Keep, and Leaving a Legacy. There's Dear Younger Me, and then there's one about your grandfather. What's the name of that?
The Company You Keep.
The Company You Keep, but the one about your
Leaving a Legacy.
Right. Okay. So all of them about heroes and mentors. You also did that great TEDx talk about choosing your heroes. So one more thing about Dave Benthall that everybody should know, and when you hear that first intro, you might be surprised that he's also a world-class water skier. So Dave, let me turn the microphone over to you, and let's hear some of your initial thoughts about choosing heroes, being a mentor, and being mentored.
John, thanks so much for your kind introduction. You forgot to mention the most important title I have. I'm a grandpa of nine. That's way more important.
Wow, I didn't know that.
I just spent the weekend with five of them up the mountain, and our 2 4-year-olds allowed me to help shepherd them down the mountain. We had a wonderful time. So, John, thank you for the opportunity to be here. So,
that omission, I think, comes partly from just a sense of jealousy that you're nine ahead of me.
and God willing, we're hoping for a soccer team by the end of next year. So we'll see, maybe a couple more. So, John, thank you for the opportunity that you've given Lynn and I just to talk about this topic. I think the way I'd like to begin very, very briefly is just to say that some folks from Vancouver would recognize some office buildings in downtown Vancouver that bear my grandfather's name. He was my first hero. And I didn't choose him as a hero. I just looked up to him. He was bigger than me, but he was also bigger than life. And so I wanted to be like my grandpa. He was a man of great integrity, a man, a very creative, visionary leader, and someone who was dedicated to his family, dedicated to the community, dedicated to his church. So I wanted to be like him because he was a natural heroic figure in my mind's eye as a young boy. And then, of course, my dad was, you know, who I guess many people have had tragic relationships with their father. I'm one of the fortunate ones who was able to look up to my father as also a heroic figure for me. He was a visionary. He went to New York, saw the Rockefeller Center, but wouldn't it be wonderful if there was something like that in Vancouver and developed the what are now five towers in the heart of Vancouver. So John, when I think about heroes, these men were my first two heroes and they were my first two mentors, so to speak. But what's interesting is I sought to become, following their footsteps, work in our family company. I quickly started thinking, well, how do I learn more about leadership other than just dad and grandpa? And so I started paying attention as I read books. You notice on my bookshelf behind me, lots of books that I've found great inspiration from. And I started reading about Churchill. You know, everyone would agree that this was a magnificent, heroic figure. So I wanted to be like him. Well, being like Churchill means, amongst other things, thinking about not quitting when it gets tough, never, never give up, are words that he uttered famously. Well, I started to be kind of like never give up. Well, that's not a bad thing, unless you're trying to work with others in the family and you take a never, never give up approach to every argument you have. So I actually started getting a bit off track because I was following a heroic figure who maybe was, if you're going to go to war, John, you want to follow him. But if you're trying to work with your uncle and your dad in business, maybe you want to take a different approach. And then my next mentor led me down the garden path in a second way. I watched the first Super Bowl over 50 years ago. Vince Lombardi was the coach of the Green Bay Packers at the time. And I've been a Green Bay Packers fan ever since. The Super Bowl, some people know, you know, the trophy's named after Vince Lombardi. He was famous for a number of things, but one thing he was famous for saying was, winning is not the most important thing. It's the only thing. Well, yeah. Okay, that may be fine if you're a football player, but it's not fine, again, back to my life, it's not a fine example if you're working in your family business. So, John, I ended up, and I'll put it absolutely bluntly, I ended up forfeiting my chance to lead our family company because I became too much like Vince Lombardi and too much like Churchill in those ways, in terms of never giving up and always trying to win. And so in the 25 years since, having left our family company over 25 years ago, in the 25 years since, I've been thinking about, as you say, much more methodically, who should I be learning from? And in the intervening years, I've been taking time to learn from people like Benjamin Franklin, people like Nelson Mandela, people like Einstein, not people that I can meet, they're no longer on the planet with us, but people like them who I can learn from and cultivate emotional intelligence so I can be a better leader, better father, better grandpa, frankly. And so, John, I think it makes a huge difference who we choose as our heroes because de facto our heroes become our mentors. And so in my TEDx talk, which I'll conclude with, I said, if we change our heroes, we'll change our life. And I do believe that.
Really interesting. So you really touched on not only how to choose heroes, but how to not choose heroes or how not to get over influenced by them at the expense of good traits that you want to cultivate in your life. Wow. Well, speaking of good traits, you know, one of the ones I think about is courage, another is perseverance. And tonight we have with us somebody who in the year in which she won a bronze medal in the 1984 Olympics in the 3,000 meters, actually had a compression fracture in her hip. So imagine what it would take to win a medal. Imagine what it would take to run against Zola Budd and Mary Decker. But imagine the temptation to just throw it all in when you have suffered that kind of injury. She went on after that, 4 years later, to come fifth in Seoul in the 1500 meters. She's converted her incredible athletic prowess into coaching. She's a professional coach. She's inspired thousands of people. She has a program called Get Back to Running in COVID. And I can tell you about it because I followed it. And you should too if you've been injured and you want to get back to running. And I think one of the greatest tributes paid to Lynn Kanuka Williams was paid by my daughter, Maymay, who said, you know, there aren't many people who are pushing just over 5 feet tall, but who are a giant in terms of energy and charisma and inspiration. Lynn, over to you.
Wow. Thank you, John. Thank you. And thanks for your great words, Dave, just getting us started here. Mimi's larger than life herself. And that's something, it just comes to mind spontaneously for me, is that the people that we become connected to and maybe view us in some way as a kind of mentor or role model often become inspiring to us as teachers. It's really such a symbiotic relationship. It's a big topic, a really important one. Funny, your invitation to join you here on this panel discussion came to me when I was visiting my mother. And so I said, this is going to be interesting. And I said, Mom, you are a mentor for me, such an inspiration for me. And I'm talking, I said, Dad was too, may he rest in peace. Huge, huge. I mean, I grew up in a smoking, drinking, fun-loving, extremely supportive family, you know, in Regina, Saskatchewan. And our parents threw the five of us in activities, you know, to keep us out of trouble. That was really the premise. And family was everything. But I said, Mom, I said, as inspiring as you and Dad are and were, it's our grandmother that I think of, that I think for me taught me to be so kind of strong and tenacious in a world, her world at that time. They were, you know, German immigrants and became farmers in Saskatchewan, and we were always exposed to everything around farming as I was growing up. And my grandmother wore 1,000 hats, and even as a young person I really recognized that her strength, from milking the cows in the morning to feeding the seven children they had, plus all the hands on the farm, hands on out there in the fields, and then, you know, darning socks at night, and then inspiring her husband, my grandfather, you know, Lovey, she would call him. Lovey, we need to be forward thinking. We need to buy machinery. He would say, we can't afford machinery. We need to, we have to do this. This is, in other words, she was so you know, progressive at the same time as a world, in a world where I think women, we've come a long way. And you know, there was a time where then it was very difficult to wear all of the hats around the business as well as the home. And she was also incredibly feminine, and I respected how strong she was at the same time as, you know, they'd be getting ready for church and she'd be looking gorgeous and lovely, and everybody had to be put together. Their things, you know, had their place. So I could go on about my grandmother, but that really was kind of, I think, when I really thought about it, that's, I draw and drew so much strength from her. But for me, and in the way I see what it means to be, to seek mentorship, to learn, Dave, I couldn't agree more with we never stop learning. And in order to continue to learn, we learn from each other. So that means it's a journey. It's a process. I've been very organic in my life. I tend to be organic and see things as a journey that, you know, when you listen to that voice inside, you somehow tap into your spirit and you connect. If you allow that spirit to thrive, and that's maybe what mentorship is helping others to tap into what energy they do have, so that somehow or another, they can seek, they find, they learn, and they, you know, discover and move in the direction that they're meant to go for themselves in the best way possible. So that's kind of a start to where we're headed today.
Lynn, if I could just chip onto that, just celebrate your grandma. It's so interesting because as I hear you talk about her and the multitude of roles she played, she so much reminds me of my grandpa, right? Because he, like her, lived a well-balanced life, full life, but he had his fingers in everything. And isn't it wonderful that you and I come from families where we can look up to our grandma and our grandpa and genuinely look at them as heroic inspirations for us? So it's great.
So if you just joined us, you're hearing Dave Bentall and Lynn Kanuka, and the topic was choosing your heroes. Very interesting that both of our panelists have referred to their parents and grandparents as heroes in their lives, because it leads to a certain conclusion that while we think about choosing our heroes, we who are parents or grandparents may be in the unlikely role of becoming heroes to other people without really thinking about it. And one of the things I'd like you each to address, and maybe Lynn, we'll start with you on this, is thinking about youth. We all have a certain determination to lean into youth, and we see all of the challenges of youth. We see young people wondering how can they afford a home. There's issues like the fentanyl crisis that really hits people in their 20s across all demographics. And yet, you deal with young people all the time, Lynn, and then Dave, in your world of succession planning, you're dealing with youth. So Lynn, let's hear from you. How do you mentor or be mentored if you're a young person? And by the way, if you're in the audience and you'd like to propose a question for Dave or Lynn, please do so in the chat line. Lynn.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been a privilege to find my life in such a place that I've been a coach from the time I stopped my own athletic career. And it began with, you know, primary school students, mostly because I was coaching at a club that we founded. And then I started to have children. We had children. And so then I found myself coaching youngsters on up. And so I've coached young people from age 7 or 8 all the way through to, they're still young people when you get to my vintage these days at the highest level. So, you know, what does that look like? It's not easy to kind of put words to that process, but I think that the most important thing is always the journey. It's always where do we go with this? And it's about life. My life has been sport. But sport is life. The way that you cope with successes, the way that you cope with the preparation, the way that you cope with, you know, the challenges along the way, whether it be injury or whether it be a performance that doesn't go the way that you hope. These are things that prepare you for, you know, life at large. And I think I would try to just emulate my own experiences, I suppose, if you will, because I certainly lived all of those things. But then helping young people realize that you're never ever stuck, and we are not defined, in my view, by any one particular moment in time, nor performance, nor ever a certain result. Because, you know, every day is a new day. You know, every challenge is a new challenge. A door may seem to close, but if you're open to it and you learn to tap into your own energies with encouragement and maybe a bit of help, then you realize another door will open. You know, it reminds me of, well, my daughter, I have 4 children, but when she was quite young, She might have been, maybe only 15 or 16. And she was trying to make sense of some challenges in her own life. She's a very good athlete, and teenagers, we're talking about youth. Right now they're faced with so many things, overwhelming, things that are going on in the world for which they're stepping forward into whatever their past was and all the pressures right now that exist for our teenagers. And she was trying to explain such things. And she, I love this. She analyzed life like a deck of cards. She said, "Mom, I was thinking it's like a deck of cards with all these places and people and events and things in it. And every time you make a decision, no matter how big it is or how small, that deck gets shuffled, maybe a little bit, maybe a lot, but all of the things that were in it initially are still there. They're just in a different place." And I love that. It's helped me. It's helped others. It's helped even other people that I've mentored when they've had to tackle certain things, just to make sense. And then to realize there's always a solution. There's a solution for wherever you're at.
So I want you to maybe think about this and come back to it later in the conversation, but you remind me of the story of the boys in the boat where, you know, the story is about sport, but it's way more than that. It's about preparing for life. And you touched on that a little bit, doors closed, doors open. In the athletic life, you're practicing to achieve some athletic result, but you're preparing for so many things beyond sport when you're coaching in athletics, aren't you? Okay. Dave, what's your thought on this? You're actively involved in working with youth in a different sort of way. You've been an athlete yourself. You are an athlete yourself. So you know what Lynn's talking about. But what are your thoughts about youth? 9 grandchildren? Holy mackerel.
Well, John, it's interesting. You'll forgive me if I try and be methodical and think about 2 or 3 points. My uncle was a pastor, and I said to him, "Do you think most sermons should have 3 points?" And he said, "I believe that every sermon should have at least 1 good point." So I'll see if I can give you 1 good, and then maybe a couple others. I got 2 or 3 thoughts about this, John. The first is that I was mentored by a couple in Montreal, Philippe and Nambi de Gaspé-Beaubien, and Philippe and Nambi have 3 children who all have Harvard MBAs. And they talked a little bit about their approach one day. And in a very endearing way, Nambi said, "You know, the way we parented our kids was probably not the best, but between the two of us, we managed to do something." She said, Hubby would always say, "You can do more and I expect more of you." So I would draw from that the importance when we're mentoring others, youth and others, that we set high standards. Dad was always setting high standards and saying, "You can do more, you can do better." And Mom was always coming along beside her chick saying, "You can do it, you can do it, you can do it." And I think that's such a lovely pattern for us to think about as we mentor others. I think we want to do at least those 2 things, John, and Lynn, you might agree with me, that we want to set high standards and then believe in people that they can get there. So that, for me, that's the framework I like to think about when mentoring others. But then I also like to just define the term. What on earth is mentoring anyway? When I was first asked to mentor someone, I turned them down because I didn't see myself as a mentor. Like, I can't mentor. I don't know what I'm doing myself. Well, how can I help you live your life? But someone shared with me that mentoring is very simply sharing your life that someone else can borrow from it. And I think that's such a lovely invitation, because you can be the same, you can be younger than someone and mentor them because you're just sharing your experience. And so I have found with the clients that I work with or young people that I work with, if I can say, "I had a similar circumstance to that once, may I share with you what happened to me?" And you just share your experience and they can borrow from it. It's not a "you should do this, you should do that, I'm great, I can do." It's just, "Here's what happened to me. If there's anything in that, fill your boots and you can try, you can learn. Anything that I share with you is fair game." So, John, those are a couple of thoughts in terms of how I think about mentoring, especially as we think about those who are following us along in life, those who are younger than us.
Let's turn our attention to those young people who are an audience today. who may be wondering, what in the world do I do with this? If there's somebody out there who might influence me positively, would I dare go to them and say, would you be my mentor? I mean, somebody
I recommend with... don't. I recommend don't. I recommend you never do that.
So, okay. And I want you to expand on that in a second. And Len, I want to hear your thoughts as well. I'm somewhat in awe of my own parents and what they did. My dad, he suffered as a prisoner of war, got through 3.5 years of captivity. And I always thought, wow, I could never do what he did just to survive and help others while he did. And I'm fortunate to have such a great role model in terms of courage and perseverance as my dad. But beyond that, I remember approaching Charlie Kirkwood, a guy who lives in Pennsylvania, who became my mentor. He established a series of law offices throughout Asia, started during the Vietnam War. And many years afterwards, when I got to know him, I chose to try and follow his footsteps. And I would go back to him from time to time, and he knew he was my mentor. You know, I was trying to do what he did without all his aptitude and all of his prowess. And he played a role in my life. I remember, believe it or not, when I was deciding whether or not to propose to Donna, I went to Charlie and I said, hey, Charlie, you're someone I look up to, you know, you're my mentor, what do you think? And we had a very earnest conversation.
I'm glad he talked you into it.
And he gave me good advice. So there are persons who are mentors by virtue of their role. Parents and grandparents come to mind. Then there are persons that you go to. And in Charlie's case, I went to him. In your case, Dave, somebody went to you and said, would you be my mentor? So for a young person listening to this conversation, in a world of uncertainty, how do you cultivate mentors? Who wants to go first?
Lynn, do you want to jump in?
Sure. There's of course many thoughts rolling around in my head, but I think that it's important for anybody, but a young person or anybody to somehow, how do I figure out what it is I need? What am I looking for? What are my kind of goals? What do I hope to achieve? What do I feel? So these are questions, even as a coach, that I would ask my athletes, and I would ask anybody if they were seeking help, so to speak, recognizing that maybe you need help to do whatever it is that you need in life, what it is that you're needing at any given time, because that also changes over time. And we can have many people that are our support, our mentors, so to speak, the people that we look to give us guidance. And so once you do that once, you know, asking yourself, what am I feeling? What is it I'm needing? How can I get there? Who do I know that could help me? Is there somebody? And it can take, sometimes it can be organic, and you can find yourself if you are a runner in the sporting world or doing something in athletics, then you're going to find yourself in the athletics world, so that perhaps that person comes along that you just resonate with, and they thereby naturally become, you know, that person that will guide you. Sometimes though, and sometimes it takes that first time experience to realize, okay, I'm pretty good where I am, but I'm missing this, that, and the other. What am I missing? How can I get there? So asking those questions, and then trying to tap into the energy to source whoever that may be. And as you use the words right away, John, that, you know, you're my mentor. What do I do? A Jack Taunton entered my world, a Doug Clement, a Thelma Wright. These are people that come to mind in my athletics career who their mentorship ended up way beyond being coaches and doctors. They became these people that, you know, you look up to, and they become lifelong friends, if you will, and continuously, you know, there's a mutual respect and learning that goes on over time. But initially they provided guidance for me. I find myself, I guess, in that position with others, but always asking that question, because sometimes you have to move on as well in order to discover what you need.
Let me interrupt you and press you a little bit on this. Put yourself in the shoes of a 20-year-old person. How old are your kids? They're from what to what age?
Oh, my youngest 23, my eldest now 32.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so your 23-year-old. Think of your 23-year-old's peer group. When they're interacting with people, how do they do it? Do they go and sit down and have a lunch discussion? Do they go for a run with somebody? Or is it this? And in this world where my kids, Shane, Jake, and Maymay, they're way more prone to get on and send a text to somebody. Mm-hmm. So it strikes me that you may be speaking a bit of a foreign language to somebody like my kids when you talk about cultivating a mentor. So adapt to what your 23-year-old is thinking or what my 22-year-old is thinking. Mm-hmm. Help us out. Is this something where you have to do a rethink about how your human relationships are and get away from this? Or is there a way you can use today's technology to cultivate mentors in your life?
Well, you bring up a good point about the complication and wonderful parts to, you know, technology today. I mean, I will get on my phone and try to search up whatever information I might need as well, but quite often that still winds up leading to a person. And I know that with the relationships that I have, whether they be online or whether they then will somehow become more personal and direct with direct conversation, because I do think that that's really still important. We talked about that earlier. We're on Zoom. This is wonderful that we can connect this way, but you know, if we can meet in person, there's an energy that you just really can't ever, you know, get away from when you're in person. But is it good to search, to, you know, to follow, whether it be on Instagram or, you know, these sorts of, you know, avenues that are open? Yes, if it's helping, if it's providing guidance, if it is getting you somewhere with somebody that, you know, it starts here, and the right situation will present itself such that that energy inside is tapped into, so that there's a positive movement. When there's a positive movement, you know it, you feel good, it's moving, there's a forward movement, and there's a path there that suddenly seems right. The moment there's some kind of blockage there, anxiety perhaps, then maybe it's time for a slight, you know, a slight change.
Okay. And remember, folks in the audience, to send your questions or comments in on the chat line while we go. Dave, I think you've been probably aching to jump in on this part of the conversation.
Well, I just blurted out a few minutes ago that don't ask someone to be your mentor. And the reason I said that is that I have been turned down when I've asked people to mentor me, and I've turned down other people when they've asked for me to mentor them. And I got some advice from one of my mentors about this topic. And some of you would know Peter Legg. And I talked to Peter one day, and he gave a speech about how we should all have at least 5 mentors in our lives. And you said you might want to have a mentor in different areas. You know, different areas, as you said, Lynn, it might be one area that you recognize a weakness or a desire to grow, to get someone. So I remember having a mentor as a professor at the university, a mentor as a writer, mentor as a water skier. You know, we can have mentors in all kinds of areas of our lives. But the reason that Peter said we shouldn't ask people to mentor us is that is putting a burden on someone, and it's asking for a commitment from someone before you've made any commitment to them yourself. So let me illustrate that. Peter told me about one person that he has had mentoring him for 25 years, who he's never asked to mentor him. He went to this person and said, I have a problem. Could I have lunch? Could I buy you lunch? They met for lunch, talked about the problem, and said, what would you do if you were in my circumstance? And this wise business person said, well, I think if I were in your shoes, I'd do this, this, and this. And Peter said, thank you very much, paid for lunch, sent him a thank you note, and did what this person said. And then 3 months later, having had good results doing what his hopeful mentor had told him, he said, by the way, phoned him and said, I want you to tell, it's gone so well. can I buy you lunch as a thank you? Because it went so well. They met for lunch again. He explained what happened. And he said, the problem this week is this. What would you do with this? And for 25 years, he's been getting great advice without ever asking someone to mentor him. But what is the secret? Those of you who are listening, what's the secret? The secret was acting on what the mentor suggested. I have lots of people I will give tons of time to if they'll act on what I suggest. The people I don't want to spend any time with, they come and ask me, what do you think I should do? And I say, well, if I were in your shoes, I'd do this, this, and this, and they do nothing about it. And they come and they bump their head against another problem. They say, what do you think I should do now? And I say, well, if you did what we talked about last time, you wouldn't be where you are. So, John, I think it's a reciprocal thing. And I take great energy from working with people who are prepared to put into practice what we talk about together. So I think what we need to do if we're wanting to cultivate mentors for ourselves in our lives is I think we need to be grateful and we need to put into practice what they say and then get back to them. So that's just a different strategy of thinking about it rather than asking folks to sign up. Does that make any sense, Lynn or John, as I'm describing that?
Of course.
Yeah. Go ahead, Lynn.
Well, no, it makes perfect sense. And essentially we are speaking the same language. We, you know, you ask a question, it becomes a conversation. It's a sharing of life experience and one begets another. And it works. Again, it is a process. It's a process. And we can't be afraid to connect with people, be it online or be it in person, because we have both options going on. And then what do you think? It's a simple question. What do you think? Yeah. How can I help? It's a dialogue that or what would, a relationship.
Or what would you do if you were facing this circumstance? Yeah.
I'm going to try and make a strong statement here, and I want to hear what both of you have to say about it. I'm thinking about all the young people who joined my team when I served as a member of parliament. We had one of the biggest volunteer teams on Parliament Hill, and our office door was open often late in the evening when all the doors in the corridor were closed because we did labor-intensive events. We created Ski Day on Parliament Hill and Swim Day on the Hill and Bike Day on Parliament Hill. We did things that other MPs didn't, and I only could do it because I had a great team of people. And guess what? When they joined me, they brought in other people. Well, one of the conditions that I imposed on myself was someone who was on my team got 30 minutes with me during the week. Even if I weren't, if I wasn't in their time zone, they have 30 minutes on the phone or whatever. Why? Because they wouldn't dare to ask a busy member of parliament for help, for career guidance or whatever. But what was the biggest thing I could do for these people who were my hands and my legs and my ears and my eyes and who were experts at social media and who were fantastically networked in Parliament Hill and could bring an army of people to do things? Well, I could give them something little like that. And you know what I found was it took a while to warm up. They didn't really believe it. I'm a volunteer on the MP's team and I'm supposed to spend 30 minutes with the MP talking about stuff that's important to me. They wouldn't believe it. Somebody in Preston Manning's organization contacted me recently. He's a young lawyer, and he asked me, do you mind if I come to you for mentoring? Well, I have two mixed emotions. One is, oh, do I have the time? But the more powerful emotion is, wow, this is flattering that somebody wants me to give them insight. So my comment, and again, I want to hear your thoughts about this, is don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to ask somebody. And I think this was highlighted in Blanchard's book, The 1 Minute Manager. You know, I have this promise out there. If young people see something I might be able to help them with, I always have 5 minutes for anyone. And maybe 5 minutes isn't long, but if maybe I can provide more than that, but that's my guarantee at least. So what do you think? I'm thinking of those 20-year-olds again who may feel that you don't go to the professor's door for help, or you don't go to the coach for special instructions, or you don't go to that seasoned business expert to get guidance in life because they're too big, they're too inaccessible, they're too busy. I'm not important. They're too important. I can't approach. What do you do with that? Remember, you're 20 years old as you answer the question.
Lynn, do you want to go first or drop me to?
If you've got a burning answer that comes to mind.
No, I don't. Go ahead.
It's not easy. It's not easy to make those first inquiries or steps in a certain direction, but it starts. This is where we talked about a mother, father, grandmother. Maybe it's a friend. Maybe it's the parent of a friend. It's about speaking, just conversation. And one thing does lead to another. When there's a sense of uncertainty, I'm worried about my exam. Oh, what is it that you're worried about? I'm struggling with this. Have you talked to so-and-so? I mean, it's opening up about what possibly is something that is causing any kind of stress. And I was going to say too, it's not all, I feel like I'm sounding so, I am organic. However, when you have a specific need, you've really got to express it in order to seek proper guidance. And that ends up happening if you're out with it in some way.
Lynn, I just want to totally agree, wholeheartedly agree with you, because you think about the example I gave of this fellow who had mentoring for years. It was because he came with a specific problem. He didn't, John, ask for mentoring.
No.
He asked for help. That's right. The difference in my view. So if you're 20 something, don't go ask for a mentor. If you're listening to me, I would say, don't go ask for a mentor. Explain your problem and say, can you help me? And mm-hmm. and if the person has an idea, they may send you to talk to John Weston, who's got 5 minutes, or they might send you to Lynn, who knows something about that particular. So they might point you in another direction, or they might say, let me share with you, or can we have coffee? I think, mm-hmm. Lynn, you're onto it. I think it start with the problem or the concern and just blurt it out and say, here's what mm-hmm. I'm struggling with. Dad, Grandpa, George, Mary, yeah. help me.
There's a huge element of trust involved here too. So when you're feeling vulnerable and you need help, people will recognize that. And so but the trust picture comes in because you speak to people that you trust. And those words, can you help me, or I need mm-hmm. help, are appealing to anybody, to the busiest person on the planet, to somebody who doesn't typically take the time, suddenly will take the time. And it's human to care.
Yeah, it's eye language, right? I'm struggling with blank. Can you help me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I think this is really useful in the ears of somebody who may not be used to asking for that. It seems like the young man in Oliver, you know, please, sir, can I have some more? I mean, who would ever ask that question? Well, maybe you should ask that question. Now, the tone of the discussion in the last few minutes has been, I have a personal issue I need help with. Let's go back to where we started the conversation. These global events that seem larger than us. And we almost cringe when we think about promoting peace in the Taiwan Straits. What can John Weston do about that? What about the war in Ukraine? What can we do about those poor people seeking shelter as the bombs rain around them? What about homelessness or fentanyl? Are these larger than life questions? Let's say you want to make a difference, but you don't know what to do. Is this a place for a mentor or a coach or a hero? Is this where you go to someone else and say, I want to make a difference. What can I do? Can you help me? That's different from, you know, I have a personal issue, right? What are your thoughts?
Oh, it is.
Well, if Tony Robbins was here, he'd say, if you want to do anything in life, find someone who's done it and ask them how they did it, or look mm-hmm. at how they did it. And so in the same way as we might go to a coach with a problem, as Lynn has so beautifully outlined it, if we want to make a difference in the downtown East Side, then I think that the answer, and I don't mean it's a simple answer, but I think it's a logical one, to go to someone who is actively involved in making a difference and saying, I'd like to lend my hand to what you are doing. How can you use me to be helpful? And again, it's asking a question, but it's rather than volunteering a problem, you're volunteering your time to to help out. So I think we go to people who we respect and who are making a difference and saying, how can I join you in trying to make a difference?
Mm-hmm. With relevant experience.
And I was thinking it's really helpful for all people, young people, people of my vintage, to break things down into small steps. So it's overwhelming. Any large project can be overwhelming. How do I get there? But if a person then somehow, if you can somehow ask that question, I totally agree, Dave, find someone who's done it. They'll help you. Having said that, even if you're prone to using your phone and finding out something about a particular thing that's bothering you that you want to take action on, then there's a way to just say, well, what is a small thing that I can do? And small things, as we all know, we know this cognitively and inherently that it can make big differences, and one thing then leads to another. So if it's small, with a running program, first thing you got to do is just get laced up and step outside. That's as simple as it is to make a start. So making a start can be huge for really anything that is on the table to be sought after or achieved.
John, I agree with you completely, Lynn. If I can just add a little sophistication to the conversation, because we're talking about just simply asking questions. Someone I spoke to earlier today, one of her early assignments 20 years ago was an organization had raised $200 million and their job was to try and prevent the Holocaust from repeating. Big problem. And they didn't start by looking at talking to people who were already making a difference because nobody was doing it yet. So what they did was they started with a landscape analysis. Let's try and understand. So one way to get started in solving a problem can be, as Lynn and I've been arguing or advocating, asking people who are involved in doing something. Another way is to begin getting educated, which could be an online search. It could be talking to other folks, but trying to understand the problem before you dive in. And so that can be a very exciting phase, because this woman that I was speaking about, who helped to choose where and advise donors where to spend $200 million, she now spent the last 25 years working with families to give away money to make a difference in the world. And they begin by saying, okay, we want to help with maternal, one family wants to help with maternal health. Okay, so let's analyze the landscape. Where are the problems? Where are the opportunities to make a difference? So part of the answer, I think, John, to making a difference is becoming educated about the problem and becoming educated about what's happening.
Mm-hmm. And maybe I would add to that, I'm thinking about my experience in launching the Canadian Health and Fitness Institute, which is designed to make Canada the fittest nation on earth by 2030. And my first sentiment was, I have nowhere near the ability, the experience, the skills, the intelligence to take on such a huge task. So I just went and found the best persons I could find and invited them to join this board. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Lynn, you've been part of that. We have over 30 persons, fantastic, accomplished people. And the miracle is that the more great people you bring on, the more great people come along.
Yeah.
You know, so I suppose that what you're saying is, don't be daunted by the Goliath type challenge. Be prepared, however, to admit in your humility that you need help, and then go out and get it. If it's worth doing, don't be stopped by the fact that you lack the resources yourself. Mm-hmm. Find somebody.
Mm-hmm. Well, great leaders are surrounded by people that are both positive and helpful and skilled. And really, that's the truth too. We often will say that, you know, surround yourself with positivity and the people and things that are going to, you know, help feed into that. So it's a simple concept. It's not that complicated, really. Although it does become, but why is it? We need to just vocalize, ask the question, what do I need? How can I find the guidance to get there? How? Ask those questions, where? And one thing does lead to another, and small steps in this regard will make all the difference. And suddenly too, goals can become larger and greater in magnitude, and then involve more people.
Well, and Lynn, you remind me of, I don't remember the name of the company, but one of the largest advertising agencies in New York, the head of the company was being interviewed one day, and he had a set of those Russian dolls on his window ledge. And someone said, "What are those there for? Have you, you know, have you been to Russia? Are you, you know, collecting the dolls?" And he said, no. They're to remind me that if I, as an employer, if I hire someone who is just a little bit less than me, and they hire someone who's just a little bit less than them, eventually we'll become a company of midgets. But if I hire people who are bigger and better than me, and they hire people who are bigger than better than me, and we'll be a company of giants. He said, that's been my approach. And of course, he created a hugely successful organization. So surround ourselves with people who are, Lynn, who are better than us, right?
Mm-hmm. True. Yeah. I had one more thought. Just one more, many more thoughts. But you know, it's just one of those things. You take those steps forward. One thing leads to another, and setting goals then becomes actually something that is also very, very important. And it may not start that way exactly, but it just goes in that direction.
I'd like to get you to answer one more question, and then sadly our time is ebbing away. But am I mixing up mentors and heroes? You know, Dave, you just talked about hiring people who are bigger, the giants. Are those heroes or are those mentors? And again, I'm wondering, are they two different categories of persons? Do they overlap? If you're a young person and you want guidance, are you looking for a hero or are you looking for a mentor or both?
Do you want me to go first, Lynn?
Sure.
Sure. I don't have the right answer, but I have an answer. So let me just offer it. John, I have confused them on purpose. Because I believe that if we choose heroes, like I chose Churchill and Vince Lombardi as heroes, I didn't choose them. They became my heroes. I inadvertently made them into mentors, because I think those who, what do we spend time on? What we drink in, it has, you know, Tony Dungy famously said, you know, what's up in the, down in the well comes up in the bucket. So if I'm spending time thinking about Churchill or Vince Lombardi, that's going to flow out of my life. So I've purposefully confused the two, because I want to encourage family business folks, the people I work with professionally, I want them to choose heroic figures as their mentors. And so if I can just talk about one that we haven't spoken about today, you know, many of you would remember in 1972, front cover of the Time magazine, there was a tragically memorable picture of a young girl who'd been hit by napalm and her clothes had been burned off her body. And Kim Fook was running down the road screaming, "Hot, hot." And so her picture is on the front cover of Time magazine. And I had the privilege of meeting Kim a few years ago. And, you know, she was interviewed and someone said, "Take us back to 1972. What was it like in South Vietnam when the South Vietnamese dropped napalm?" And she said, "Whenever I think about that day," and she'd shown photographs and video of that tragic day in her life. When she said, "When I think about that day," and we all went silent, what is she going to say? Is she going to say, "I get nightmares"? She said, "Whenever I think about that day, I thank God." I went, am I hearing right? And she said, "I thank God because everyone else in my village was killed, but I survived." And then she talked about running down that road. And she said, "My hands were," I said, "What were you screaming?" She said, "I was screaming hot because napalm heats up to 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit." And she said, "I was screaming hot, hot. And that soldier came and heard me. And so he poured water over my head to cool me down." And she said, "He didn't realize that napalm heats up the more oxygen you have on your, it's exposed to. So when he poured water on my head, it heated up the napalm so much that I went through such terrifying pain that I passed out." And she said, "Whenever I think about that soldier, I thank God." I'm going, how does this woman cultivate this kind of an approach? And I've met her, talked to her many times since, John and Lynn. She is a mentor for me because of her heroic stature as someone who brings gratitude even into horrific circumstances. So you mentioned I'm a competitive water skier. When we ski badly and someone is tempted to get down in the mouth, I say to them, Ryan, no napalm today, which is our way. Be grateful. Be grateful. Come on, get your head, get your perspective right, folks. So that's why I like to choose heroic figures as a mentor, because they have the ability to slice through the daily challenges of life and give us a better perspective. So that's just my take on it. Good, bad, right, or wrong. Lynn, what do you think?
It is about a lot about perspective, though, isn't it? And I do think that I was thinking in my mind the differences between, or what is the difference between a hero and a mentor. And a hero, I think of it, a hero as, yeah, that big, extraordinary person who has some sort of accomplishment that is so inspiring. It doesn't matter what walk of life it is. It's inspiring because of their efforts and their courage and perhaps terrible strife. In this world, there are many such examples of people that then you can draw inspiration from, because you realize, wow, okay, if they can do that, then I can certainly do this, you know, and that becomes, you know, something from within. I think that a mentor, and that if you can reach out to such people, they can then become mentors, of course. But I think those mentors, so I think heroes inspire us. I think mentors are those that wind up guiding us, you know, towards our
nice
goals.
That's a great distinction. Wow. Well, you both talked about inspiring people, and you both, I like to leave our audience with ways to go deeper. So I would invite you to suggest books that you might recommend. I'm going to start off, just because I don't want to embarrass Dave, I'm going to mention his books. So he's got this one about his granddad leaving a legacy, and tells you something about a heroic person in his life that he's talked about this evening. It's called Leaving a Legacy, Navigating Family Business Succession. Then there's one which I found really intriguing, because it was aimed not just at men, but there was sort of a man focus on this. The Company You Keep, you can kind of see that from the cover picture, about three guys. And the subtitle is Transforming Power of Male Friendship. And then the most recent one, Dave, Dear Younger Me, a very humble book where you talk about things that you might have done differently.
All the mistakes I've made in one easy to read volume.
Yeah, that's right. And all of those mistakes, and actually it's quite a long book, Dave. So there was a lot to talk about. So there are three that, and by the way, these will be listed in a document that we'll have on the website, so you can go back to it. Don't worry if you don't catch them all now. So do either of you have any books for our audience to go deeper with?
Go ahead, Lynn.
I do. I have such a variety of books. It's by my bedside table, and I'm reading any one of them at any one time. But my loves for inspiration tend to be pretty simple. I have one that I love just that I need. It's like a short, you know, short little people stories. And it's called The Book of Delights. And if I just need a feel good experience, and I find that very inspiring, because then I look to what's going on in my own world and I think, okay, I can do this, that, and the other. That one's by Ross Gay. But my choice, I don't know if it's going deeper. I read, I love epic kind of experience stories, true stories. And a book that always comes to mind as the first one that sort of inspired me in this way, because I also love history and I love our Canadian history. And it's not a complicated book, but it's the story, it's called Mrs. Mike. And again, it's like my grandmother. It's the two, it's funny how this just comes together. But, you know, it's the story of a pioneer, a European woman who, you know, who comes over to this part of the world and winds up making a life in the north with an RCMP person. It's a very, you know, it's a true story. And it's just epic in what they have to endure and what they have to do to survive. So it's important to know that we can do it. We can survive. And such books make a difference for me.
And who wrote Mrs. Mike?
Oh, did I write that down here? Benedict and Nancy Friedman, but I can, it's my, appeals to the love, my love of the wild. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Dave.
I'm going to go with four real fast. We just spoke a little bit about Kim Fook, who was featured on the front cover of Time magazine. She's written a book called Fire Road. It's on the, it's on my bookshelf back there. So I recommend her book. Inspiring, stunning, partly historic, mostly autobiographical. And then my three favorite books on the planet are You Gotta Keep Dancing. I used to buy it 10 copies at a time and give it away. Second is 1,000 Gifts by Anne Voskamp, who's from Lynn from Saskatchewan. Like, I don't know if you've read her book. It was featured on Oprah Winfrey's best books a number of years ago. And then Mark Buchanan, who's my favorite author. He's I can't figure out whether I like his writing style more or what he says more, but both, every page is amazing. And Mark wrote a book called The Rest of God about how we can take Sabbath, find Sabbath in our lives. So those are four for me, John, that I've found super inspiring and helpful.
Really fantastic. I'm going to add two more. One by a close friend of Dave's, Carson Pugh, Mentoring Leaders, about mentorship. Somebody, me, when I entered politics, Preston Manning's book, Faith, Leadership, and Public Life. And all of these will be listed in a document that we'll make available on the website. I'm going to thank you, Lynn, and you, Dave, for a fantastic chat. My lament is that we're not doing this side by side to get back to a theme of this conversation. We'll have to do that another time. Really appreciate your generosity in sharing your wisdom and the way you've leaned into other people's lives, because I know there are countless times when you have been mentors and coaches to people. I'm going to close with a couple of thoughts. Don't forget January 13th, our next show of Things That Matter. And if you would care to do so, I'll just share my screen. You can watch past episodes like this one on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And that way you can share the link with tonight's show in case you've got friends who didn't get on the line. I want to close in wishing everybody not only a Merry Christmas, a blessed Christmas, but a fascinating, fulfilling 2023. And I think tonight's discussion may have set you up to think about how you can be better, grow into your potential, and potentially help others do the same thing. Thank you.
John, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Boring from you. As we head into 2023, I guess we all need to just put on our running shoes and get out the door.
Movement is medicine. It is.
Wonderful. Good night, all.
Great. Thanks so much. Take care. Bye now. Happy holidays.